As a government contractor, you don't want to be known as a whiner. Companies fear that if they get reputations for protesting bids, it could hurt them in the long run. So says Tim Sullivan, a veteran of the contracting world and writer of the blog 10 Myths of Government Contracting. For the next 9 Tuesdays, we'll be talking about these myths with him. In today's installment, Sullivan explains myth number 2, that you should always lodge a protest.
Contractors need to be judicious in deciding when and where to protest. It's just, you're talking about, let's face it, suing your customer or potential customer. So right there, there's an alarm that goes off in any business person's mind, and you have to be careful and choose your protests. However, just as I said last week with the first myth, we should never protest. In this one, there are some people out there who think they need to protest everything. If they can just put a little pressure on the agency, there might be some corrective action that falls their way, and they throw everything up against the wall hoping for the best. But that's simply not a smart way to go.
Yeah, that was my question. Are there companies that are protest happy?
Oh, yeah. There are companies whose names pop up time and time again, and time and time again, they go down in flames on these things. But there are other companies whose names you know very well, and we all know very well from reading the paper, that even though they're very successful in the government market space, from time to time, they will file a protest.
All right, so given the two myths, never protest and protest everything because you might win something, what is a good strategy to really decide when it is the right time to protest if you don't want to be at either extreme?
Well, that's a great question. And last week when we talked, we talked about the 30% success rate at the GAO, and I wouldn't want anyone listening to think that that means that no matter what the issues are, you've got a 30% chance of winning. What that means is that 30% of the 2,500 or so protests a year are successful. But what we advise our clients, and I think all good lawyers do when a client comes to them and talks to them about a protest, is we have them look at a number of things, as we've said in the myth here. First, look at the facts and look at the law. Those are the two big things. What are the facts? Was your proposal really as good as you say it was? Did they really misevaluate the proposal? Did they do something or other that really prejudiced your company? Are you in a position to file a protest? If you're ranked fifth, what does a protest do for you if it's only going to get you to fourth? Now, that's something that we look at. So first, the facts and the law are the two most important things that we ask our clients to consider, and we walk through those two factors with them very carefully. Second, look at your relationship with the agency. Is this agency a regular customer? Do you have other contracts out there where there might be options in the offing that are just about to come up and to be exercised? Or do you have other proposals out there with that agency? And if so, do you really want to file a protest now and cause a stir with this particular customer or potential customer? So those are two of the things we look at. Third, look at your team of subcontractors. How much have the team and you invested in this program, and do you owe it to them to file a protest based on the merits of the case and on the feelings of the team? And you'll consult your subs in many of these cases and talk to them about these things. And look at the potential expense. How much is the contract worth? If your profit is only 5 or 6% on a job, and it's a $3 million job, well, okay, is it going to cost you all your profit just to hire a law firm to file your protest and pursue it? And lawyers should give you a good realistic estimate up front of what it's going to cost. And at the three different forums, it's going to be usually pretty different, but they'll tell you. As I point out in this myth, there is a chance that if you prevail, you're going to be allowed to be reimbursed for your legal fees. But that in and of itself is never a reason to file a protest, because those reimbursements they're out there, but they're not a frequent thing, and it certainly isn't 100 cents on the dollar. So there are a lot of things to look at and a lot of things to consider, and you have to do it in a very short time frame because the protest period is short.
We're speaking with Timothy Sullivan, a partner at the law firm Thompson Coburn. And one thing that you allude to is the idea of ill will. I think people sometimes forget this is a person-to-person business, even though it's highly legalized and highly regulated. How can you file a protest if you think you really do have a good shot and good grounds without generating ill personal will with the contracting officer or the program manager that is part of that source selection committee?
Well, there's never a guarantee that you're not going to tick somebody off. Let's face that. But what the smart contractors do is they look at the facts and the law. They calculate their chances, and if they're going to stay in the game, they have to take the shot. But they want to take that shot without calling a contracting officer or a source selection official a liar, incompetent, or a boob. You can write it in a professional way that simply challenges the decision on the merits without going after someone personally. In my view, getting personal in this business is one of the biggest mistakes you can make, whether it's in a protest or a claim or anything else, because then people drop their institutional goals just to get back at you. So, yeah, you hit the nail on the head. It's the government. That's true. But these are people we're talking about. They have feelings. They have emotions. They have pride. They have their own sense of dignity. And if you take them on personally, you're building a problem for yourself.
Now, there was a recent case of a roofing contractor. There was a task orders that were being competed among three competing roofing companies. I think it was a NASA deal. And one of the contractors that got almost all of the business, it turns out that the technical representatives for the contracting officer were convicted of taking bribes from that bidder. The problem was that the Court of Contract Appeals and all of the chain that normally hears these things said this is not within our jurisdiction. It was legalism that kind of let an injustice go on. How do you handle a situation like that? Just sort of grin and bear it?
I don't know the case. It sounds like a fascinating case, and I'm guessing it's probably because it was a task order under an IDIQ contract.
That's right.
If it's under $10 million, GAO can't take it. The courts can't take it, so you can't touch it. You go to the IG, you ask the IG, or you go to the FBI or the Justice Department and ask them to look at something like that if you believe there is corruption there. That's all you can do. And then it's in their hands. There's really nothing else you can do about something like that.
But in general, it sounds like it's safe to say that even if you thought you had a better bid, in most cases, you should just let the agency's discretion prevail because you'll be in a better position to win another day.
It's possible. Again, it's based on the facts. I mean, I have heard an old dog once told me that you win losers and you lose winners, so you don't always know. And what will happen often, Tom, is that we'll look at a case and we'll explain the situation to the client and how it could go either way, and discretion is a factor. And oftentimes what law firms will do is, and the companies will do, is they'll file the protest and they'll wait the 30 days to see what the agency's documents show. And then the law firm and the client will confer to decide whether they actually really do have a good protest, perhaps a better protest than they thought originally, and whether to stay in the game. But they may file an initial protest to get on the board and see what the agency's documents show.
You've also written that the debriefing session, if you can get one, can be a great source of understanding and learning for the company that did not win. How's that work?
Well, the debriefing is required in virtually every negotiated procurement. And in fact, the way the rules work, you can't file a protest until you've had your debriefing. So it would be a mistake for a company, and some do, to learn they've lost on a Monday and file a protest on a Tuesday. Unless the basis for that protest is something they knew without the debriefing, then they might want to do it just in case. But usually you have to wait for your debriefing, and the regulations have a clear list of things that the agencies are supposed to tell a contractor during a disappointed offeror during a debriefing. And we ask our clients to prepare for these things, walk through the list of things they're entitled to in the regulations, and be prepared to make sure they get what they need, because the debriefing process was designed to make offerors understand where things went wrong for them and how they could do things better the next time. Now, it doesn't always work that way, and some people are very cynical about this, but the debriefing process that's been in place since the Clinger-Cohen statutes that you and I talked about last week in the 90s, that process is really very good. It is fantastic compared to what used to go on in this business, and where you'd get into a debriefing and the government would say, you lost because they won because you lost, goodbye. That's over. These are pretty good debriefings now with a lot of information. And many times we'll look at the information a client gets from a debriefing and we'll say, forget it. Don't waste a penny chasing this award anymore.
And a final question. There's a timing issue with respect to when the Dear John letter arrives. So you have to read that carefully to make sure that your protest period starts before you think it starts.
Well, right. What some agencies do, agencies have the choice, Tom, of deciding whether to conduct a debriefing in person, by phone, or in writing. And many agencies or send that notice to disappointed offerors out. We call it the Dear John letter. And that letter is actually two things in one. It's not only the notice, but it's also their debriefing. And it walks through the list of things that purportedly are required to be provided during a debriefing. The thing is, if you look at the regulations on debriefings, one of the things the agency is supposed to provide is, I'll paraphrase here, reasonable answers to reasonable questions asked by the disappointed offeror about the procurement. Well, if you get in a letter, you don't have you're cut off from that opportunity to ask those questions. So we advise our clients, always respond immediately with a list of questions you want answered, not 1,000 questions, a reasonable list, and advise the agency that you will not treat the debriefing as having concluded until you get the answers. And most agencies cooperate with that. They provide the answers, and at that point, your debriefing period, your protest period will start. However, If you stay silent, you get that letter. It's clearly a notice of a debriefing as well as the notice of the disappointed offeror, and you don't do anything. Your protest period has begun.